Radio Prague News. A Prague bid to host the Olympic Games in 2016 has won the support of city councillors. The US Congress has taken a first step towards cancelling visa requirements for Czechs travelling to United States. And the head of the Catholic Church in the Czech Republic says that relations between the church and President Václav Klaus are far from ideal. Prague city councillors supported the city's proposed candidacy for the Olympic Games in 2016 at a meeting on Tuesday evening. The city council will now vote on the matter on Thursday. If, as expected, most of its members vote for the proposal, Prague will become an official candidate for the Olympic Games and compete against cities like Berlin, Madrid and Rio de Janeiro for the honour of hosting the event. The US Congress has taken a first step towards cancelling the requirement for Czechs to get a visa for travelling to the United States. Senators have approved a proposal that would allow visa requirements to be cancelled for countries like the Czech Republic, who are allies of the US in its so-called war against terrorism. The proposed legislation would have to be passed by the House of Representatives in order to come into effect. The head of the Catholic Church in the Czech Republic has said the church does not enjoy the best of relationships with President Václav Klaus. Speaking on a radio program on Tuesday, Cardinal Vuk said that relations with the president were not very positive. In particular, the cardinal highlighted Mr. Klaus's negative reaction to a memorandum drawn up by a number of Catholic organizations on defining the relationship between church and state and finally settling the issue of church property. In 50% of cases when a patient is prescribed an antibiotic in the Czech Republic, it is unnecessary, the head physician of the antibiotics department at Prague's Nahomolce Hospital, Vlastimil Jindrak, warned on Wednesday. The exaggerated use of antibiotics leads to bacteria becoming immune to the drugs. This could result in an epidemic, he says. Czech doctors would also save money if they used other forms of treatment, as health insurers currently spend some 3 billion crowns on antibiotics a year. The Social Democrats have criticized government plans to sell 7% of the state's stake in the power giant CEZ. The shares, worth some 35.7 billion crowns, are to be offered on the stock market later this year. The daily Hospodářské noviny reports that the revenue is to be used for the construction of roads and motorways. And finally, a quick look at the weather. It is expected to be mainly cloudy with sunny intervals and sporadic showers. Highest temperatures should range between 11 and 15 degrees Celsius. I'm Lita Asiedu, and that's the end of the news.
Hi, this is Radio Prague and I'm Ian Willoughby. Today, Prague councillors want to bid to host the Olympics, but could the city cope with such a big event? How safe Czechs feel, may depend on where they live in the country, and do Moravians constitute an ethnic minority? Then, later in the programme, an unsolved mystery surrounding the past of communist leader Clement Gottwald. Please stay with us. Prague city councillors have just voted in favour of the city making a bid to host the Olympic Games in 2016. The council will now decide on the matter on Thursday. If, as expected, most of its members vote for the proposal, Prague will become an official candidate for the Olympics. But not everyone thinks this idea is a good one. Colleen O'Connor has more.
Považuji za klíčové, že prostě v Praze nebudou stát olympijské infrastrukturní stany jako pomníky minulosti.
Prague mayor Pavel Bém at a special press conference on Tuesday, outlining his ambitious vision of how Prague might host the Olympic Games in 2016. The city's councillors have just voted in favour of supporting the idea that Prague should make a bid for the world's biggest sporting event. It will now go before the City Council on Thursday, which is expected to give the green light for an official bid from Prague for the Olympic Games. This will mean that the Czech capital will compete with cities like Berlin and Rio de Janeiro for the honour of hosting the Games in 2016. However, not everyone is in favour of the idea. Deputy Mayor Markéta Rýdová is one of just two city councillors who voted against the proposal.
My main concern is the risk of raising the cost of the Olympic Games, and I think that London is facing it at the moment. And especially for a smaller town as Prague, it's quite a risky situation if the cost goes up. Also because Prague hasn't got at the moment the infrastructure. One of the condition, if the Olympic Games is supposed to be the good one, which we would profit of, the condition that should be the infrastructure in the place. We haven't got it at the moment and we have to work on it.
The organisers of the London Games in 2012 denied that they have actually gone over budget. They also say that the billions of pounds of money they spend on the Games will be of enormous benefit for the city by improving its infrastructure and helping to attract millions of tourists. Some estimates suggest that the Prague Olympic Games might cost around 135 billion Czech crowns, or 6.3 billion US dollars. Money well spent, says the vice president of the Czech Olympic Committee, Jiří Zednicek.
Unfortunate that the a priori approach is from the negative side. Everybody talks only about the costs. I would see that as an investment into development and promotion of the city of Prague and of the country. I don't think it's too big a project for Prague.
Markéta Rýdová admits that she can see the benefits of holding the Olympic Games in Prague, but says that the city should approach the matter cautiously.
You know, a priori against the Olympic idea, but I am a little bit skeptical, and that's why I also, when there was the vote on the Olympic Games yesterday, I said it. I'll be the watchdog of the council, because this discussion needs some critical view. Because if you are only overexcited about the fact, oh, we are going to host Olympic Games, you start doing things and it's actually the cost starts shooting up. Therefore, you know, I'm not saying that if we manage to do the low-cost Olympic Games and we will have everything in place, yes, you know, why not?
Prague Deputy Mayor Markéta Rýdová, ending that report by Colleen O'Connor. Recently, the GfK polling agency released results in an ongoing long-term survey examining the extent to which people feel threatened by crime and unsafe areas near their homes. The study looked at all 14 regions in the country, areas like Pardubice in central Bohemia or Zlín in South Moravia fared best, with only 20% of respondents saying they felt threatened. But areas like Karlovy Vary and Prague did far worse. Jan Wellinger reports.
The new poll by GfK has attempted to show where Czechs feel most threatened by local crime. Feelings are, of course, subjective, but nevertheless indicative about how people feel about their surroundings. I spoke to the agency's Michal Straka, one of the authors of the study.
The idea was to find whether Czechs felt threatened by crime near their place of residence. The second thing was whether people thought police were doing enough. 3,000 people were polled, and the areas that finished with the highest numbers were Karlovy Vary, Ústí nad Labem and Prague, all at around 40%. There, citizens were most wary. The findings in Prague generally reflect statistics done by the Interior Ministry, suggesting an average of 500 crimes per 10,000 people. In particular, Praguers are most afraid of car theft and violent robbery, almost twice as afraid as anywhere else.
Not surprisingly, satisfaction with police work ranks lowest in areas where crime is seen as a greater threat, although a number of people I spoke with in Prague said they thought the situation with the police was improving. Among them is well-known pop musician Pancho, who lives on the edge of a rough-and-tumble park near Prague's Angel business district.
I personally feel quite safe because I'm a pretty big guy and usually people leave me alone. But my wife and I live on the edge of a park which can be pretty brutal. In the summer, all kinds of homeless people and drug addicts take it over. Two people were found dead there in the past. One policeman was injured. I personally haven't had any trouble, but if it's late at night, I'll always accompany my wife. Or if she leaves somewhere earlier than me, she'll take a taxi right to our door.
Singer Pancho is not alone in using common sense regarding unsafe areas, and most of the other people I spoke with on the streets of Prague on Wednesday had similar approaches.
I'm from Žižkov. I'm not scared because around my house there is a lot of police in the night, police cars.
Are there any areas that you avoid?
In general, all the areas in which you cannot see where are you going without lights or in the parks.
I don't feel safety. Several times I have stolen things in my car and I saw several young people who stole something.
I don't think that Prague is such a big problem. Maybe if you live near the main station because of the homeless and so on. But otherwise, I don't think Prague is a problem. Now, Czech law gives special rights to minorities, who make up at least 10% of the population of a town or village. This gives them the right to have public signs in their own language, and to use their mother tongue when dealing with government authorities. According to the last census, Moravians, who live in the eastern half of the Czech Republic, are the second largest ethnic group in the country. That would give them special rights as a minority, but the question is, are they one? Lenka Petakova has been finding out.
In the last census taken in 2001, there were about 380,000 people in the Czech Republic who claimed to have Moravian nationality. But unlike Poles on the Czech-Polish border, for instance, Moravians are not treated as a minority group at all. The cultural as well as language differences are very small, and most people in the Czech Republic, Bohemians and Moravians alike, would not even think of regarding Moravians as a minority group. However, the law on ethnic minorities defines them as such. And although the authorities know that the law is not observed, the Interior Ministry, which is in this case responsible for the definition of minorities, is not going to make any changes to it. Whether Moravians should enjoy the same rights as other ethnic minorities seems more than questionable. Politicians, experts and Moravians themselves are not unanimous on the matter. Also, there is no official Moravian language. It is rather a dialect which does not differ very much from Czech. I spoke with the leader of the Moravians party, Pavel Dohnal, and asked whether he thought they should be treated as a special minority.
There's no reason for it, and I think it wouldn't be justified because we Moravians consider the whole law concerning ethnic minorities to be bad. What we particularly dislike about the law is that it doesn't define Moravians as an ethnic majority, just like Bohemians. It is one of the ethnic majorities in the Czech Republic. According to the law, we are an ethnic minority, but naturally we do not feel like a minority in our own country.
Many experts question the existence of Moravian nationality, but Mr. Dohnal says this mainly concerns Bohemian experts and that they have their own reasons for doing so.
It depends on who those experts are. Experts in the Czech Republic have been working in support of some politicians who wish to suppress the promotion of Moravian identity. I can give you a practical example from Slovakia. In Slovakia, they have a governmental committee for ethnic minorities. Besides the representative of the Czech minority, there is also a representative of the Moravians on that committee. And it is only logical that if there is a Moravian ethnic minority in Slovakia, there has to exist a majority somewhere. And I don't see where this majority is supposed to be, if not in the southeast of the Czech Republic in Moravia. So, it is always a question of these would-be experts and their political view of the matter.
Moravian politician Pavel Dohnal, ending that report by Lenka Petakova. Now, moving on. Dagmar Damkova is one of the leading female football referees in the world. In 2003, she made history here in the Czech Republic when she became the first woman to officiate in the men's first division, while at the end of last season she became possibly the first woman in the world to referee a National Cup final. But now Damkova has been struck off the list of top-flight refs for the second half of the season. The referees commission say it's because she failed to complete a fitness test, even though she was ill at the time. I asked her if she thought that was the only reason.
Well, who knows? Well, I can think about lots of things, but what I actually read in the newspaper, because this is the only way how I got to know it. So that's it, that this is the reason, and that I didn't do anything wrong in the last half season, but that I didn't do anything excellent. So just that's it.
Do you think it wasn't fair of them to not give you another chance to do the fitness test when you were ill?
Well, I will have the chance. Yeah, I will have also the others referees, because we were about, I think, 6 or 7 referees who were excused from these fitness tests. So we will have the other chance, but we will have chance, but for me, the top division is closed.
So what will you do now?
I'm training for passing the fitness test, even if it's really, really tough for me. In the Czech Republic, we run much more than the referees in the World Cup in Germany. Can you imagine that? And then, well, I'm going to try to pass the fitness test. If I pass, I might possibly referee the second division. It depends on the committee.
What about women's football? I know you went to some kind of seminar on women's refereeing in January.
Yeah, definitely. So far, I've been talking just about the men's division over here. So women's football, what I'd like to concentrate more on. I was in January in Canary Islands, and it was the FIFA seminar for the top referees. I would say that who has a really big chance to get to China to the World Cup, which is in September this year.
Do you think next season you'll be back in men's first division football, or has this setback perhaps put you off football a little bit, men's football here?
If the committee is going to be stays like this, with these people, I think there's no chance for me. It's really strange over here. If I can compare it with the last season, I would say that the end of May, I had the final of the Men's Cup. Even the chairman of the leader of the Czech Football Association, Mr. Mokri, he wanted me to referee the game. So I did it, and I think I did quite a good job. So everybody was satisfied. Even Mr. Mokri called me afterwards and thanked me for that, thanked me for everything. And, you know, now it's 9 months later, and everything is different.
I was talking there to Czech football referee Dagmar Damkova. Now, in this week's Czechs in History, Dita Asiedu looks at an unsolved mystery in the past of communist leader Klement Gottwald, who died 54 years ago on Wednesday.
Vracím radu od prezidenta republiky. Mohu vám sdělit, že pan prezident všechny mé návrhy...
I have just come from the castle, where I have seen the president of the republic, and I can tell you that he has accepted all of my proposals without making any changes. The famous words of Klement Gottwald, who made the speech on Wenceslas Square in 1948, shortly before the then-president Edvard Beneš resigned, and Gottwald himself became Czechoslovakia's first communist president in June. Klement Gottwald was born on November the 23rd, 1896, and died 54 years ago on March 14th, 1953. But although he died in Prague as a famous and powerful figure, there is one mystery in his past that remains unsolved to this day, his place of birth. Until he moved to Vienna to work for his uncle at the age of 12, Clement Gottwald lived with his mother in the South Moravian village of Dědice. But his mother was a poor peasant woman who served on the estate of a local farmer. She never revealed who Gottwald's father was. It is most probable that Clement Gottwald was born in the village of Dědice, but locals can only speculate where exactly the birth took place. To cover this up, the communist regime tried to have the nation believe that the estate farmhouse where Gottwald's mother worked was where Clement Gottwald was born.
They thought this up because Gottwald held such an important function. He was the highest representative of the Communist Party. The local communist functionaries strived to honor and celebrate him somehow, and the best way was to pick a building that would represent his birthplace. But in order for it to fit their ideology, it had to look simple. So the building was reconstructed to remind people that Clement Gottwald was born into poor conditions.
Says František Korvas, the head of the Vyškov Museum near the village of Dědice.
Všichni věděli, že to není pravda.
Everybody knew that it was not true, but of course everyone was silent and no one dared to object. Even Gottwald himself avoided being involved in this. He wasn't there when they worked on the building, and he didn't even take part in events that were held there in his honor. So it was really just an initiative of all those around him to score points and prove their political loyalty. It was a mere glorification. Before he went off to work for his uncle, Gottwald's childhood wasn't very nice. Imagine a single mother, no father. He surely had to endure a lot. We have information that he faced some rather rough treatment.
About a year after Clement Gottwald died, the family for which his mother had worked was forced out of their manor house and a major reconstruction took place. The ceiling was changed, the building was lowered by one floor, and the windows were made smaller or completely walled over. The interior was also changed to fit that of a working-class home.
Since the village is in the Haná region, the building was originally a large manor house and all profit that was made was put into its appearance. But unfortunately, to be in line with the communist ideology, because of Gottwald's working-class background, it had to undergo massive renovation. So they put in a black kitchen, which in our opinion wasn't even used anymore in the buildings in that area at the end of the 18th century. The furniture was also put there for a purpose. We still have the cradle in our depository, but it's just one of those regular wooden cribs and was taken from a completely different place and naturally had nothing to do with Gottwald. There was a small area with a tiled stove that came from our depository and was passed off as a living room.
While locals merely had to tolerate Gottwald's fake birthplace, others had to pay it a visit.
They would take scouts there and workers from around the country, and they would be told about Clement Gottwald and his life and what he had achieved. So it was used to spread the communist ideology. These visits were pretty much obligatory. They would hold scouts' oaths there, and so on.
today, local residents don't even give the building a glance, and most visitors pass by it unaware of its history. What once was a shrine to communism is now just a storage building for the Vyshkov Museum.
That edition of Czechs in History by Dita Asiedu takes us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. As always, if you feel like commenting on anything you've heard in today's program, or if you've got any questions that you'd like to ask us, don't hesitate to get in touch. You can write a letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2, or send an email to english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us. Goodbye and take care. Thank you.